My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Does it not work the way that we think it does?
Maybe we shouldn't talk about Green Goblin just in case.
Wait a minute. Someone asks, if I cast LED and discard my hand and have Frantic Search in hand, can I generate infinite mana this way and draw my whole deck?
Oh no, definitely not. Once the Frantic Search is cast,
it wasn't discarded. It's a new object now. I know that's not true. Once you cast it for its mayhem cost once, then the next time it's in the graveyard, it wasn't discarded this turn. It was cast.
Okay, yeah.
So that's wrong. I know that for sure.
Okay. Then what are we trying to figure out?
We are trying to figure out, just to double check, and I'm pretty sure this is how it works, that if I have Lion's Eye Diamond and also two more available mana, and I sacrifice my Lion's Eye Diamond and pay him a two mana to cast my Green Goblin from the command zone. So I discard my whole hand, sacrifice Lion's Eye Diamond, and I cast Green Goblin with that Lion's Eye Diamond mana. With a card that I've discarded to the Lion's Eye Diamond, can I cast that now with Green Goblin? I'm like 99.9% sure the answer is yes, because Green Goblin says all the cards in your graveyard have mayhem, which means that you may cast them this turn if you've discarded them this turn. Timing rules still apply, and you don't have to do it right now.
Yes.
So it grants them that ability. They have mayhem now after Green Goblin's in play.
Right.
And also, they were still discarded. I wanted to make sure that you don't have to discard them while Green Goblin is in play. But I'm like pretty positive the answer is no, and that's why Green Goblin is sick.
No, yeah, it doesn't, it shouldn't have to see them. Yeah. I'm sorry, I was reading this thread and it got me thinking about something else and it sent me in the wrong direction.
What were you thinking about?
What you said is that if you can't do infinite.
No, yeah, once it's.
You can't just do infinite, yeah.
How are you going to talk?
I'm going to talk like this. Yeah, you can't just do infinite Frantic Searches because what'll happen is the first time you Frantic Search from your graveyard when it's discarded, we're going to talk about this in the podcast.
Well, this is the podcast. It started already.
It started?
Well, I don't know. You decide, I guess.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we started already. I'm Cam.
This video is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. When do I say
it? Yeah, whenever, right, I guess. Yeah, whatever. it just starts.
This podcast was brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we are talking about a couple commanders that we find interesting. I've been looking at Green Goblin quite a lot. There have been some Korvold results that seem cool. Should we also talk about that Rograkh deck that's like cascading 1,000 times? That's a curveball. We didn't plan for that.
That's true. I feel like everyone's been loving that idea recently, I think we should talk about that too.
Yeah, I feel like we should mention that. So we're going to talk about three decks that we've been thinking about right now.
Three-color decks. I love this.
Three-color decks. The three-color decks, we're thinking about. No.
I know that was something. We're
something.
Close.
We're something with the alliteration.
By the end of this episode, we're going to figure out what that is.
Yeah, we'll figure out the title by the end of the episode. Do you have a preference on which one we start with?
Whatever one you want to start with is the one that I want to.
If we are including that little hubbub at the beginning of this podcast, talking about Green Goblin, let's just start off with Green Goblin.
We might as well, yeah.
Because that's what we're starting with.
Because the podcast already started.
Green Goblin, we talked a little bit about it last week. I don't know the timing, always. But
no, that's
sure
right.
Not,
right? Yeah.
Last week, we talked about Green Goblin for the Spider-Man set review. I've been playing the Green Goblin a little bit, not the Green Goblin. Green Goblin, no the. I think the deck is cool. I want to talk about it. There's some powerful things that it does. I'm unsure if it's like the next best thing. Is it better than Rog'Sai? Is it better than Blue Farm? Definitely not. You know what I mean? But I do think it does something unique and cool. And I just want to talk about some of the cards.
Sorry, I'm trying to copy your list and I'm hitting all the wrong buttons and highlighting all the wrong shit.
They didn't need to know that.
No, you needed to know that.
Well, you're not just playing jousting games on your phone?
Well, I mean, now that you called it out. That's what is what I was doing. I was lying about how long it was taking.
You're lying. That was a lie.
That was a lie.
That was acting. Some of the things that are powerful, obviously Lion's Eye Diamond so far to me has felt like the most powerful thing in the deck, if we're playing it right, which I really hope that we are, in that it basically gives you sort of like 3 to 7 mana-ish if you crack it. If you're getting to use it as Black Lotus, you can cast all the spells that you're discarding with Green Goblin, and also giving them a 2 mana reduction is kind of crazy. So things like discarding Frank frantic search, which not only discards you more cards, giving you more range of things that you can do, but also untaps your lands. So when your frantic search only costs you one mana, but then it makes you three mana, it feels a lot more like a dark ritual that's like drawing you two cards and then making a potential other four mana for your reduced things. Gets kind of crazy, but the issue that I have had with it so far is that you have to spend your turn one normally making, like, doing mana, making a bunch of mana.
Setting up.
You spend your turn two getting the Green Goblin out, and then a lot of times for me, I've had to, like, pass a turn, wait, and then on my third turn, then I can do some cool Green Goblin shit. It's just a little bit slow. It's reminding me of, like, commanders of old, of, like, the triple pip commanders like Xur and Kess, which is part of why I like it, but part of why those commanders are a little bit less good nowadays.
It's a little bit nostalgic, and it's kind of like Kess in the way that you do get to use your graveyard.
It uses your graveyard super well, and then it turns certain cards like Lion's Eye Diamond and Frantic Search into like crazy, crazy powerful cards. A couple other things that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm rambling on. I hope that's okay.
No, I know you're very excited about this commander, and you've been playing some games with it too.
Yeah. So. A couple other ones are honestly just ways that to find Lion's Eye Diamond. I think things like Trinket Mage and Tezzeret are just ways that find Lion's Eye Diamond for three mana. I think that's worth it because Lion's Eye Diamond makes that three mana back right away, and if your deck is built right and you're set up correctly, then you get to use the three mana right away. So it's kind of like the Trinket Mage is like sort of free, and then it's a ritual. It makes you more mana,
which is really nice. Yeah. Are you thinking about putting the Untimely Malfunction in? Is that the one that I don't think that's the name of the card.
I don't think so. That was like a red card that deals like it's a redirect and it kills an artifact.
I'm thinking of another red card though. It's the Gamble, but only for artifacts.
Yes. It's a two mana. Search your library for an artifact and then discard a card randomly. If you discard an artifact, deals two damage to each opponent. The name of the card is I don't remember. Reckless Gambling, something like that. In a deck like this, I haven't put it in yet, but I really think I should, because I think any way to find Lion's Eye Diamond is just kind of cracked. It feels like it just says
it's make cracked. That was funny.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like it often just says make enough mana to cast all the spells in your hand. That's what it feels like it's doing a lot of the time, because it allows you to do that.
And just like Gamble, you don't lose out on whatever card you discard. If it is the LEDs, so long as Green Goblins in play, you'll be able to get the LED back.
Gamble is another one. The discard at random fact, you can actually, that works well with your commander, because no matter what you discard at random, ideally, if it's not a land and it's not a counterspell, you can still cast it.
It just makes Gamble literally a one mana demonic tutor.
Right, exactly. Yeah, which is what, like, the style that I'm trying to lean into a lot when I'm building this deck. There is certainly the direction that you could go with the keys. It makes the one ring cost only two mana. It makes the keys themselves cost only one mana, which makes the one ring stuff a lot better. But I played the keys for a little while in Rockside. They were cool, but they didn't really allow me to win many games. You know what I mean?
I feel like your whole strategy needs to be keyable instead of just like one card advantage engine and like two mana rocks that you have.
I think what I would like to be doing with that mana reduction that I get from my commander is winning right on the spot, because I've already had to cast my commander, pass a whole turn, and then now I do a bunch of shit. So like, think about how that plays out in games. I cast my four mana scary new commander. I pass a turn. Everyone probably chatters about how it's powerful. I get back to me, I play the one ring, and I draw like four or seven cards or something, and then I pass the turn. So now I have not only set up my scary commander and my scary draw engine, but I have a bunch of cards and I haven't won the game. So for me, that feels like I'm gonna like explode and then not win the game. That feels like risky. I'm gonna have too many eyes on me for that.
Yeah, I feel like if you're not set up to go for the long game and play every counterspell available to you and like make sure that you're safe at all times, I don't think that's gonna be worth it.
Right, exactly. And like, I don't want to play counterspells in Green Goblin because I want Wheel of Fortune. I want like rituals. Yeah. I want to do explosive shit. I want to cast things that get the reduction really well. I don't want to have counterspells, which is what I would need to have to support a one ring of drawing seven cards and then passing the turn, right?
Especially because Mayhem obeys timing restrictions,
right, exactly.
Which, by the way, they're called timing rules now, actually. They're not timing restrictions. They're timing rules.
We didn't even say what Green Goblin does. Do people know it's been on screen?
It has been on screen.
For the listeners, is it too late to say? They've already looked it up at this point, right?
The whole start of this podcast was incorrect, so I feel like we just kind of kept rolling with it.
At this point, there is no correct start to the Play to Win podcast.
That's also true, yeah.
I feel like the past month or so is just kind of whatever.
They've just started all over the place, yeah. Well, Green Goblin is one and Grixis for a 3-3 legendary creature that's a human goblin villain with flying and menace, and spells you cast from your graveyard cost two less. And the goblin formula he brings to the table says that each non-land card in in your graveyard has mayhem, and the mayhem cost is equal to its mana cost, which allows you to cast them from your graveyard if they've been discarded this turn, but timing rules still apply. Now, this is also the same card as Norman Osborn.
There's a backside.
Which is technically the front side.
They're the front side.
But it's not what we're building around, which is the one in a blue 1/1 that can't be blocked, connives when it deals combat damage, and can transform for Green Goblin's mana value.
In the Spider-Man gameplay episode, I played this deck, and I played Norman on the front side, initially playing this deck as kind of like a Rograk deck. I have a cheap commander, and then I can turn it into something cool later on. And then immediately realizing the one fatal flaw of this plan is I play my one toughness commander and then pass a turn, and Orcish Bowmaster fucks it up. And now the other side of Green Goblin is now 6 mana, because they're the same card, so even if they die, the command tax is connected, which makes them a strictly corrected version of partners, almost, I feel. Because you can cast either side. You can do either card.
And you can flip the one into the other, too.
You can flip the one into the other, but only Norman can flip into Green Goblin. I don't think Green Goblin can't flip back.
Yeah, he can't go back to being Norman, yeah.
Unless you have a card that says transform a creature you control,
there's
whatever.
There's no superhero that ever goes...
They don't go back.
They don't go back. I'm just going to go back to living my life as a regular person.
Right, yeah. So, I don't even know where the fuck I was going with that.
We were saying that it's kind of like partners.
Kind of like partner, but a little bit fixed, because you can only have one or the other, you can't have both. I have found that playing it on the front side and using it as like a cheap commander to get stuff going, I don't think that's the way. Sometimes that's the way. Sometimes you say, oh, I have no way to discard a card. If I play Norman on the front side, pass, next turn, I attack, I get the whatever it is, loot.
The connive?
The connive. It's a draw discard.
Yeah.
And then once I get that draw discard, then I flip Norman, and the thing that I've discarded with my own Norman, I can now cast with Green Goblin. Like, that's a world where that could be good. For me, I have felt like that's the backup plan.
That's what you're doing in standard with this card.
Right, yeah. That's like when I've mulligan kind of low and I don't have a way to abuse the discard thing. Like, that's not really the ideal. The ideal for me has been turn 2 Green Goblin, either win right away with like a frantic search to help ritual you up and make more mana, or win on turn 3 or something like that.
Yeah, with like defense grid backup because it was free if you discarded it with your LED.
Huge that defense grid with Green Goblin is free, exactly, if you discarded it. Grinding Station.
Also free,
but also an infinite loop with Underworld Breach just by itself. You don't need another rock because it costs for free, and then you can sacrifice it to mill 3 cards, and it goes to your graveyard, but then you can exile those cards with Underworld Breach, and since it's free, you can just cast it again, because it can sacrifice itself.
Yeah, because it doesn't need mayhem, because Underworld Breach is in play.
Because Underworld Breach is in play,
yeah,
exactly.
That's the thing. Like, what allows you to make Green Goblin busted, I think, mostly, is Underworld Breach, an already busted card that now you can essentially make every single card in your graveyard have the Green Goblin effect without the downside of what mayhem is.
It makes your ability to win with Underworld Breach like a lot more powerful. I had a game the other day where I had to cut it really, really close. And the only way that I could get something going was if I cast a big brain freeze for, I think the storm count was like 10 or something. So it was like 30 cards.
Yeah.
But I had to exile Lion's Eye Diamond and Lotus Petal to do that. It was like my last card. There was nothing in my graveyard. I exiled everything, brain freeze for a bunch. And I had like one blue mana floating or something. That's all I had. Mill over everything. And then I'm able to use Snap from my graveyard, since it costs only one mana to cast Snap, untap 2 lands, bounce something. Then I can cast Snap again and use Snap as like a ritual, a one mana to make 2 mana to bounce my opponent's stuff, and then just like naturally create a big brain freeze and like brain freeze myself out and use Thoracle and use Snap to like make the mana. In other Grixis decks, once you lose the Lion's Eye Diamond and the Lotus Petal, it like gets a lot harder to like make brain freeze go infinite with Underworld Breach.
Yeah, a lot of times someone will like have a Mind Break trap and you go, oh man, now I have to like completely find this whole new way to win. Green Goblin just like opens up a couple of these extra doors for you.
Turns a lot of things into rituals. So now all of a sudden I can just cast Snap over and over again to net all the blue mana that I need to cast Brain Freeze big again and do it that way. So
are you on Peregrine Drake?
I'm not. No, I'm on Peregrine Drake in my Yoshimaru Thrasios deck.
That's the one.
Yeah,
okay.
But
yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. The only untapping land stuff I have is Frantic Search and Snap, but I've thought about the fairies also.
Cloud of Fairies.
Because one, you can cycle it to draw a card and then
that discards it,
which is kind of fun. But also, if you just discard it to something else, it's still kind of like a Rite of Flame because it's reduced.
Yeah.
So it's one mana, untap 2 lands. It kind of makes 2 mana. So I have thought about it, but I haven't pulled the trigger yet. In my initial initial buildings of the deck, I wanted to make the deck as few bad cards as possible. Just good cards.
Yeah.
It's just a good Grixis strategy. And like Lion's Eye Diamond and Gamble are good in the deck. So lean into that more than leaning into like other weird shit, right?
I always like that strategy more of like trying to use your commander to do busted things with cards that are already good, right. Like making Intuition an even better card.
Exactly. Yeah. I want to make Wheel of Fortune better. Wheel of Fortune is so good in this deck because it just says draw 7. No discard, just draw 7.
I don't want to make Priest of Gix and Priest of Urbrask better, which I think does.
Yeah. It makes those cards good.
It's very interesting when you can discard them and then they're literally just like Dark Ritual that you can use Diabolic Intent with.
That you can snap back to your hand and
try
again.
Which also feels great. Yeah. But at the same time, like, I feel like it's dead in a lot of other scenarios.
I do have a couple of like dead cards. Of course, how can I not, you know, play a few like deadish cards, but both of them draw me cards. So I have...
Is Psychic Frog one of them?
Psychic Frog is one of them, and the blue one. I'm really bad with names today. The blue...
Oh, Ghostly Pilferer.
Ghostly Pilferer.
These are bad cards.
These are bad cards, but these cards say the word draw a card on them. So like, at least there's that. They slowly draw cards. They don't do it at quite the rate that I want other things to be doing cards, but the discard effect in this deck is very strong. And I know I've played discard outlets in Hashaton before, and Hashaton ended up being not very good, but the discard outlets in Hashaton really only made sense with like maybe 10 cards in your deck, realistically.
Yeah, because there's only 10 cards that you can cast with them, yeah.
Right, they're only the creatures that are relevant. Whereas in this deck, every single spell, not every single spell because Vampiric Tutor doesn't get the reduction, but even still, every single spell, like with the frog, I can discard them to get the counters on the frog and then still cast them with my Green Goblin. Even without the reduction, I can still cast them if I've discarded them. So,
and still exile them to the frog to kind of like recuperate cards in your hand with an attack.
Exactly, because when you cast them with Mayhem, they still go back to your graveyard, which feels kind of cracked sometimes. Whereas like if you discard them with something, you can cast them from your graveyard and then like use Underworld Breach to cast them again. You get like double value out of it. Or
yeah, whereas like Yawgmoth's Will exiles them or something like that.
A lot of the time it does. And like part of the reason why Underworld Breach is so powerful is it allows you to cast things from your graveyard and then they go back to your graveyard. That's broken. That's what Green Goblin does. I think that's really cool.
I think there's a lot of power that's within that. No Putrid Imp though, right? Like
is Putrid Imp
just like too bad on its own?
I think so. I'm already playing these bad cards and I don't necessarily like... I've gone back and forth. I'm not sure.
Because in theory, like, if you discard 7 cards to it and they all have at least 2 generic mana...
Makes a lot.
1 mana make 14 mana sounds insane.
It seems to me that, like, I almost need to be getting value out of the thing that I'm doing to discard the card to make what's happening feel powerful. I don't know if that makes exactly sense, but, like, just discarding it to make it cost less, that's fine. But when I get to, like, gamble and, like, search my library for something and then discard something else, I'm gaining advantage in, like, 2 ways. When I do it with the frog, I put a counter on so I can clear through damage and get a draw out of it afterwards. Also, not that happens all the time, but like theoretically, that's like a gain that I can get from it. There is advantage to be gained that's not just the mana reduction.
That's true. And sometimes like Ghostly Pilferer will draw you like 3 cards
if you get it
over,
early.
Like, the game,
it's insanely good against Atali, right?
Hilariously,
is it insanely good against Atali?
A spell from anywhere other than their hand.
I didn't really think about that till just now.
It's basically like having another Rhystic Study in your deck,
which is like, I don't know, Atali's getting quite popular. Maybe, I don't know.
If you're not high on interaction, all you're gonna do is draw cards and lose the game. But that's still...
And the interaction thing, I want to talk about that briefly.
Let's talk about that because I think that will help segue into the next deck that we're gonna talk about.
I've seen quite a few lists in the past 3 months, 6 months or so, shaving on interaction by quite a lot and just saying, I'm going to go over the top. I'm going to be Tron for Modern. I'm going to be big mana deck. I'm going to do over the top. And then it's your responsibility to have interaction for it and put you on the back foot. And you have to stop me rather than me trying to stop you. A lot of decks are moving in that direction.
You know where I think everyone picked that up from?
From Atali?
From Atali,
Wait a minute, like, if Atali can do well, what about blue decks that don't need the counter spells?
Yeah, right? Like, I feel like it just opens the door for other colors to also be able to do the same thing.
I think you're right, of just like, what if your deck is strong enough at just jamming and make sure that the entire pod has to pull together to stop you or you'll run away with the game, and just accepting that when they have Force of Will, sometimes you lose that game. You're already going to lose
75% of the games that you play on average.
Right, and if you just like go for a win, you put everything everyone else on the back burner of like they have to mulligan for weird starts that stop you, or they're just going to lose on turn two.
Or they have to set themselves back and then they don't get to do their plan, so that if you do get stopped on turn two, you have your turn three to push again, because now that's how your deck's built. You're not drawing into another like piece of interaction to stop someone else. You're always drawing into gas, like mana or a tutor or something else to help progress you to another win.
And I think that's like part of the aspect of multiplayer, of just like interacting with one player is so bad because it puts you and that player down resources and the other two players stay the same. So
they just get to win the game instead.
They
yeah.
are effectively up resources on you. So like you really should never be interacting unless it's like to not lose the game. And a lot of decks, these like turbo all dump decks. There's not a moment where you get to the end and you go, the fastest oracle, I'll counter that. Like that style doesn't work against these decks because like, okay, counter that one thing. I have 19 other creatures and they're like 15-15s or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like there are certain cards that'll happen that will be like, okay, well, I can counter this one thing, but I know that there's three other scary things that could come, or I don't know what else is going to come, but I know that there's all this other mana that's there. Like this is bait,
and,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And these like big mana decks know that like if you counter the crop rotation for the Gaia's Cradle early, that means that you probably lose to Rog'Sai that's coming right after you.
That's the other thing. Like I've had people like stop my
a tutor, some mana or something.
Yeah, like a mana vault. Yeah, that was the card I was trying to
think
of.
Mana vault. Yeah, they stop your mana vault and then you go, okay, well I wasn't gonna do much, but now the Rog'Sai player can go. Like that's a part of CDH that sucks. People don't want to do that. So that's why these like big mana decks understand this, that like they get to get away with it a
little bit. It's a political tool that they get to use. Yeah.
Exactly. So all that to say why we're talking about interaction and bridging that gap into these Rograk Thrasios no interaction decks is I have began cutting like a bunch of counter spells and stuff out of the Green Goblin deck.
Yeah, that
so
makes sense.
Flusterstorm is gone, Swan Song is gone. There's only free interaction right now, and I might cut some of those too, honestly.
I think that's fair. Like, especially things that are only good on your opponent's turn. Like, Force of Negation gets worse and worse as we stop caring about interacting. Like, that's a card for a deck that only cares about interacting at this point.
I've even been thinking about stuff like Mental Misstep. Like, Mental Misstep really only counters Swan Song, Red Blast, Pyroblast when it comes to interaction that stops me. What Mental Misstep is great at is countering Mystic Remora, is countering a Vampiric Tutor, is countering Mana Vault. I think what it's best at doing is countering things that stop your opponents from progressing. But I feel like my strategy is now is like, nah, you progress too. Let's both progress. And I, instead of a Mental Misstep, I have another tutor in my deck, so I'm more likely to find what I need.
I'd rather have this stop the dispel that you could potentially draw, because you have to rely on drawing the dispel if instead you had Mystic Remora.
Yeah, and another thing about the interaction with Green Goblin, we talked about Defense Grid also, but Vexing Bauble is another one that is sort of zero mana in Green Goblin if you discard it, and then it does a similar thing of protect your win from doing stuff. So I think I would rather, especially since those two are artifacts, and I'm leaning in on ways that can find artifacts in the deck because I want to find Lion's Eye Diamond. I feel like leaning into that strategy is better than the counterspells aspect.
I would think so. And this is coming from an Itali player.
Need counterspells and you win a ton of games. Why would the Grixis deck need counterspells? Like,
need them. Just keep pushing instead.
Just keep pushing, right?
You make the entire table play differently and have to do different things. They get punished for interacting with you and not interacting with you, because as the Itali player, if I don't win the game, I don't care who wins the game.
It doesn't
matter. It wasn't me. I don't care what happens. So as any of these kind of over-the-top decks, if you end up overfeeding one player as opposed to other players, who cares?
If they stopped you, they stopped you. If they didn't stop you,
Why didn't the other two players do something about them? Like, you were so focused on stopping me.
And that's like the conundrum. That's like the issue of CDH is like, by its very nature, you're damned if you don't. Damned if you do? I think it's one or the other. I think it's just you're damned if you do.
You're just damned.
Just damned. Damned. If you're playing CDH, you're already fucked.
Yeah. But we're having fun here.
We're having a good time. Okay, so that bridges the gap into Rog'Thras.
I don't know
if you have found a way to pull up any one of these lists. The main card that I feel like I want to talk about is the 10 mana Cascade.
This is really the one that's on my mind, is Apex Devastator.
Apex Devastator.
Because I feel like you can just shove this into a lot of other green guys. Gaia's Cradle decks that just want to make 10 mana super easily.
Right, and when all the cards in your deck untap Gaia's Cradle or go find more Gaia's Cradles, like Deserted Temples, like Cascade four times means like two two of that's going to make like 20 mana, right? Like at least two of them. Two of them might be nothing exactly. or something small, but
again, we're learning from Itali that like, hey, four random cards from deck is
spells.
Good.
Spells. Four random spells
You're
is
right.
good.
Yeah,
it's better than drawing a card because like drawing four cards is insane, right? That feels so good. Cascading four times if you have no counterspells is way better.
Exactly. Yeah, you not only get to draw those cards, but you get to cheat on the mana into play. It's like having Gwenum, like we were talking about last week. You're cheating on mana and getting to go through a lot more of your deck too. So even if only two of them are bums that are like, oh, I got some ramp or I got like a, I don't know, Gitaxian Probe or something, and you get two other big things that I don't know, maybe one of them also says Cascade on them.
Right.
Or
there's other Cascade cards in these decks. They're also playing the seven mana, your old commander.
Oh, Maelstrom Wanderer.
Maelstrom Wanderer in a CDH deck. What the fuck? Crazy.
It is absolutely insane with these decks. And they also play like no interaction, but they can still run like Tidespout Tyrant and they can run the other Tidespout Tyrant.
They find ways to like not die when they need to sometimes. Cards like Snap, cards like Odawara, things that can also help push them forward by being a land or being more mana, but can also touch your opponents when you need to like make sure they don't win the game right now. Like there are some things, but overall there's like very minimal counter spells, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Like Cascade originally when it came to Magic, Bloodbraid Elf is kind of what helped fight back on Jace a little bit, right? Like it helped stop the blue decks, stop the counterspell decks a little bit.
You got card advantage and a hasty body that had the exact amount of power to match Jace's toughness.
Exactly. So, like, that's kind of what this is. Like, what are they going to do? All right, cast my 10-10 with Cascade four times. You're going to counter the 10-10?
Well, you're not countering the 10-10. You have to see what these Cascade cards are.
So we Cascade the first time, and the first one's a Wheel of Fortune. I don't know, whatever. You're going to cast the Wheel of Fortune? I don't know. There's three more after this.
That's great. I'm glad that you did.
Right, yeah, exactly. You're going to counter the next thing? Okay, this one untaps Guy's Cradle. Okay, you can counter the untaps Guy's Cradle, but it's just mana. It's not a win. Now you don't have that counter spell.
I already had 10 mana to cast Apex Devastator.
Exactly. So you go, okay, I'll just let that one go. So, okay, they untap whatever, they make 15 mana, and then there's another Cascade. So it's just like, there's nothing your counter spells can really do against that. Like, Mindbreak Trap is good, but if you don't have that,
actually,
it's
Mindbreak Trap
good.
Is bad.
It's bad.
You're right. Each
not
one
even
of the
good.
Cascades go off at a time. So you cast one spell with Apex Devastator and a bunch of other triggers on the stack.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can Mindbreak Trap the one card in the Devastator, but you're still devastated.
Silence, I guess, would be a great way to stop Cascade.
I guess,
right, that would be a particular, any of the silence, there's the two mana silence or whatever, that would be a particularly great way, but those aren't counter spells. That's
not
the whole thing, is these decks seem like they're fighting
great,
against counter spells.
You have one card in your deck. Yeah, that's good against this.
Anyway, I'll tap Gaia's Cradle for 10 mana and activate Thrasios four times.
In response. It does seem insanely powerful, and I would like to note that we have played against Apex Devastator in a game before, and we have a 100% losing streak against Apex Devastator.
Do you remember what it cascaded into?
No, but it was an Anivar deck, which meant that it was a bunch of creatures and we lost.
Yes.
It was insane.
I don't know if this is like the next best thing. Is this going to dominate Blue Farm? Is this going to take over tournaments? I don't know about all that.
What happens, though, is that if you're not the fastest deck, you still lose to Itali because you gave Itali big flips and like really awesome things. You still lost to Rog Sylas because they're probably faster than you. Black gives you access to more rituals that like green. Yeah, you get good creature tutors, but you're not getting like the burst of mana that Grixis has access to. So I don't think that you're the fastest deck, but it has the ability to win second in a way that no one can really interact with. So it like also forces other players to have interaction for the other decks and use it on them so that way you can just get away with the shit that you're doing.
Right. And this is all also like on average. Like on average, Itali is faster than these decks, but like we're still like singleton 100 cards. Like understand that like most of these cards share 60 to 70 to 80 cards that are similar, right?
You're literally just adding blue to Itali's colors and Rogthras.
Turn order and mulliganing also play a huge part in this, but this is just like the averages. I completely agree is that like the fast decks, if they can get in underneath you, they still will. But the dream situation is someone counters the fast deck and then you get to go second and this deck is great at winning second.
Yeah, I feel like this is just like another mid-range hell counter. Like if we end up going more turbo, I don't think this is the way to combat that meta in particular. But right now for mid-range hell, you can either break the meta by going going faster than it and beating Ristic Study that way, or you can go over the top of Ristic Study and go, I still don't care about how many cards you draw because I'm 10 overpowering spells in the stack. Exactly. Yeah. That I only needed 10 mana for, and right. you need way more pieces to be able to interact with me.
Right.
Even like your free interaction requires you to have a second card, yeah. so you need two of your Ristic Studies to stop my one card.
Right. Yeah, and it's also like, I wonder if it'll end up being a little bit, I don't know, I don't want to say parasitic, but if like all the decks are playing like less and less interaction, then all of it would all the decks become this, and then mid-range
health. No, the turbo decks win.
The turbo decks just win,
still feeds
right?
the turbo, because yeah, now right, the turbo right, decks don't get fed. Atali doesn't spin into interaction, doesn't spin into Force of Wills, it only spins into powerful and good cards.
Yeah.
Rog'Sai doesn't have to play interaction and can just present insanely quick wins that can beat all of the things that are still trying to go over the top. Like the problem with the over the top decks is that they're still slow. Like
yeah, they're still
saying.
Slow. And there's no interaction. If someone does try to win first, there's not a ton they can do
about it.
They have
to get
early.
To a certain point, and at that point, they can't be stopped. Like even Tron in Modern needs to assemble Tron.
Needs to get to turn three.
Before it's unstoppable.
Right,
but if you can stop them before they get to that point.
Vern beats Tron, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you stop them by beating them.
By just killing them first.
You don't have to stop them by like strip mining them.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Just beat them instead.
Just win instead. Do we want to talk about anything else from that deck? I feel like we covered it. I think I'm going to turn my Yoshimar Thrasios deck into something like this, to be honest.
Yeah,
I've been having no luck with that.
Go over the top a little bit more.
That's what I want to do with that style of strategy anyway. Go over the top, and those decks seem like they're doing well.
And I think that's a deck that can benefit from this too, because you're basically just like the white version of this. So there might even be like more creatures that you would want to play that will like kind of help the strategy in white a little bit more. I don't know what, Sun Titan maybe?
Sun Titan, definitely. Derevi and Emile are like the big ones that like are really so helpful to the strategy. But
I didn't know if like there was any like other over the top, like
I don't think so.
They're all casual cards that I'm thinking
and
of.
And like Simic cards.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like they're all still in Simic. You will lose out to stuff like Maelstrom Wanderer a little bit, but that might be the only one. As long as you can play Apex Devastator, I think you're in a good spot.
I don't know why. Maybe I haven't been mulliganing correctly or bad variants, but I feel like some of the games that I've had with Yoshimar Thrasios, I cannot get the deck to like do its thing. It's just like too slow. One Orcish Bowmaster sends me back to Oblivion. I don't know. I haven't been finding the flow with it. Maybe I have to tweak some cards. Maybe I have to do a more turbo version. But these Rog Thrass decks seem much more interesting to me right now. So I think I'm going to switch to one of those.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Don't build Yoshi to match this.
I'm just going
to
build
the
powerful thing. Yeah. Should we talk about Korvold?
We should talk about Korvold. Yeah. Don't call it a comeback quite yet. But I got to tell you, man, Korvold is definitely seeing a little bit more play. I got to play it against it at one of our Patreon play days this month. And what made me interested in it is that it is completely different than what Korvold used to be.
Yeah, it's like a lands deck now, right?
It's like a lands deck now. Yeah, like Lumra's so good that it is making all these other decks way better now.
It's so funny how Lumra has just like given way to like a whole new strategy between Lumra himself, I'm not sure, Lumra. Korvold is also doing Lumra stuff. And there's also like the Wandering Minstrel, which is like five color doing Lumra stuff. It's opened up this whole new kind of archetype thing, which I think is really cool.
I think so too, yeah. So let's start talking about like these lands builds.
Well, yeah, what's the Korvold? What is Korvold doing with Lumra?
A lot of things that you would pretty much like expect, but we get a lot of extra additions in red help like not only work really well with Korvold and what Korvold does, which is be a 5-mana Jund 4/4 flying dragon noble that when it enters or attacks, makes you sacrifice a permanent. And when you sacrifice a permanent, you put a +1/+1 counter on Korvold and draw a card, which are all very powerful things.
The +1/+1 counter, obviously the most so.
That's the best one. Yeah, we want to focus on +1/+1 counters, so Hardened Scale is in this deck.
No, that's a lie.
I'm going to nip this in the bud before I confuse someone.
What are the red... Yeah, what are we doing? What's the red land stuff?
All right, so the first thing that I want to point out is that Orcish Lumberjack is in here, which makes me love this. Yeah.
I feel like that's been in Korvold, sure.
But you know what's funny enough is that this one list that got into either the top 4 or top 16 of a tournament is playing the new face commander from an Edge of Eternity's pre-con, Hearth Hall, the World Seed. And what's funny enough is that this was a card that our patrons said, you know, they bought the pre-con and it made them want to do this in CEDH.
Form a total mana for a legendary artifact spacecraft that has station, and for its +2, meaning that after you've tapped 2 total power worth of creatures on your board or more, it has the ability for 1 and tap it, sacrifice a land, draw 2 cards. You may play an additional land this turn. You can play. So if you can, okay.
That's
and then
really good.
It's plus eight is a flying vigilance haste. Whenever you sacrifice a land, each opponent loses two life. And also it's a 6/7. That is, I mean, that's cracked. It's four mana though.
It's cracked at, yeah. I mean, it's four mana, but like, I think the first ability is strong enough that it's worth playing in your kind of more longer game lands deck.
Is it used in the plus eight? Is there a loop that you can loop your sacrificed lands over and over again and use it to kill the table? Is that what we're doing?
Probably.
That's got to be what
can
we're doing.
Can I see again?
That's got
to
be.
Because Korvold makes it super easy to station this thing to get to eight.
That's true. Yeah, you can probably station it almost right away.
Now, whenever
you
sacrifice a land, each opponent loses two life. Yeah, that makes sense because that just means that like whenever you sack a land to Zurin Orb, you're helping destroy your opponents. That's just how you take the table out.
Because the card draw is also nice, but it's four mana and then you have to wait and untap. That feels like not ideal. But maybe this is just like a manual thing, like between Mayhem Devil, like, are you combining forces to try to like manually land storm out your opponent? Is that what's going on?
I think it's kind of like what the Tanuk deck that I built for the channel for Edge of Eternities kind of did. Like, you get to do a little bit more of like a grindy version of Lumra,
yeah,
where like your commander helps you draw and does like something else a little bit more interesting so that other land sacrifice synergistic stuff gets you more advantage. So, like, it makes Orcish Lumberjack a little bit better. Like, Avendo Brush Razor gets a lot more better as well, too.
I don't see a way to recur. Like, I don't see a way to do infinite land drops is what I'm trying to look for. I just see, like, a bunch of ways to make extra land drops.
So, a lot of these loops, you don't want to keep playing lands. What you're going to want to do is end up using the Alchemist.
It's Lumra. You use Lumra. You loop Lumra somehow.
But you can also loop, like, the Alchemist. The two-mana Alchemist that, when it enters, makes you mill three cards.
Aftermath Analyst,
Aftermath, that's what it is. Aftermath Analyst, yeah. So when Aftermath Analyst is in your graveyard after you've sacrificed it, you can, like, bring back Shifting Woodlands and then use your mana to make Shifting Woodlands copy the Aftermath Analyst. And then you can loop your lands back and forth that way, too. So you're not necessarily looking for, like, infinite land drops. Like, you're trying to find ways to, like, infinitely loop Lumra with like Lumra and Mirror Pool that we've talked about before on the channel. This Aftermath Analyst combo will do this too.
Squandered Resources.
Squandered Resources is a great one. In this deck because it works so well with Korvold so that each land is two mana and a draw.
And that's okay, so that's what it is. It's Lumra out. It's something like a Squandered Resources and you sack all your lands and Lumra becomes a 0/0 and die. But then you use like the Mirror Pool or something to bring it back.
And if you have Korvold out as you're sacrificing your lands, you're drawing more cards into more action. Tanuk was the same way, where it was like a little bit harder to find wins with Lumra in particular because Lumra doesn't just go back to your command zone.
Right, yeah.
So like you kind of have to find other cards in the deck to kind of make things keep going a little
bit. Yeah, even if it's something like Underworld Breach and just like you're making so much mana that you just recast Lumra for six every time and you're milling four cards and then you get to use three of those cards to recast Lumra and maybe one of them is a land, you bring that back in.
Yeah, getting
that's really sick,
to
actually.
Underworld Breach is insanely strong.
Very
for
cool.
This
and
deck,
it feels hard to interact with a lot of the time.
I mean, it is. Yeah, that's kind of the strength of these lands builds is that they are difficult to interact with. Like a lot of the loops that you're doing are based off of land triggered abilities here, but I will say this one doesn't necessarily loop with a lot of like the pain lands that we're used to seeing.
Okay,
this is going to be a little bit more like Wandering Minstrel, where you can take advantage of the fact that you're not in mono green and there's some other cards that you get to play that like help out your strategy a little bit more. Looking at you, Dakmor Salvage.
Oh, you know what's cool that I saw? I think it's Springheart Nantuko. The one that makes
Springheart Nantuko,
the one that makes one ones every time a land comes in,
exactly.
And then Warren Soul Trader. Sacrifice all those 1/1s now for a treasure. Make your own Lotus Cobra type of thing with those two out, right? That's kind of cool.
That is kind of really nice.
And you're playing a bunch of extra creatures that, like, once you get the extra land drop from whatever your thing, you can, like, sacrifice it to Soul Trader. I'm sure there's some other loops that you can go through with that, too.
World Shaper is another one of these cards that, like, kind of helps bring this deck together in particular. This is the one that, when it attacks, lets you mill cards, but when it dies, you put all the lands from your graveyard back onto the battlefield tap.
What's the 4-mana green spell that does that? There's a sorcery that does that. It's like the mainstay of my AC deck. You just scape shift and then you do this one to bring them all back. Oh, what's the name of it?
Something with a... Splendid Reclamation.
Splendid Reclamation, yeah. This is like Splendid Reclamation on a Sacrifice outlet, but it's a little bit better for this deck because it's a Splendid Reclamation that you can get off of like a green Sun Zenith or another one of like the, yeah, the green creature true. Tutors.
Are they playing Splendid Reclamation or
Scapeshift?
No, not Scapeshift either?
Just this. Yeah, not Scapeshift
either. Scapeshift, I almost, I feel like, I don't know, that one would make a lot of sense, but fair enough. You want
like
the body.
You're in black. Like, yeah. Tanuk wanted Scapeshift and a lot more of those effects because it was relying on finding them naturally, but because you get like Demonic Tutor and Imperial Tutor, Imperial Seal.
That's the one.
You get access to like the same effect in like so many different cheaper ways that way too.
Yeah, and I think coming with the body makes it a lot better because with Korvold you can sacrifice the body and just like having it be on a permanent is so much better because it's like maybe easier to recur or reanimate a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And you get like Ruthless Technomancer too, which also like there's ways that you can like Ruthless Technomancer your Lumra, which is probably freaking huge if it's stuck in play.
Yeah.
And then you draw into cards like Reanimate and Animate Dead so that you can like kind of, you know how like your Villas Casual deck just like kind of brings Gary back a bunch and like that's how you win?
Yeah.
This is kind of what this feels like is like you're able to just sacrifice stuff a bunch, make a ton of treasures, you know, and they get you a ton of draws with your commander and they help you find more ways just to incidentally bring Lumra back and forth.
I can definitely see a world where you have that station out or something and you sacrifice 10 lands and then it deals 2 damage to each opponent for that. So like you deal 20 damage to each player and then you draw 10 cards because it was Korvold or something. And then you're able to just do that one more time, another 20 damage to each opponent. Like I could see that being a world where that's how you win the game.
Yeah, and you only need to play 33 lands in this. Whereas like we're used to Lumra decks that are like up in the 50s and high 40s for their land count. You get to play more good cards.
That's pretty nice. That's cool. Are you having any interest in this deck or no?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, this is, I have been liking these land strategies, and I kind of like that this just kind of gives you like a lot of these extra tools. I don't know if it's better than Lumra is the thing. Like a lot of these other versions, you're like, it's just better because
it's more colors.
In theory, yeah, it's better because it's more colors. But the command zone is such a busted mechanic, and putting Lumra back in the command zone instead of relying on naturally drawing tutors to find reanimate and get Lumra back into play a stupid way like that, I think is a little bit more helpful, right? Like Lumra, I only need 2 things. Something that makes my lands come into play untapped and something that sacrifices my lands. Korvold, I need Korvold in play and I need Lumra. I need to find Lumra. I need to cast Lumra and then like go through all the same steps.
Yeah, it does feel like some of the decks where Lumra is in it as a combo piece, the Lumra combo is muddled up a little bit because you don't have the command zone, which is just almost part of the Lumra combo is the command zone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So when you have it in the 99, you don't have access to that. It does make those lines more difficult because when Lumra dies and it goes back to the command zone and you can just recast Lumra again and again and again because each time you've gotten rid of Lumra, you've made like 10 mana. So
you can
cover the command tax where like you can't do that in this way.
It's nice that with Underworld Breach, Lumra is always going to cost 6, but like Underworld Breach also kind of disenergizes with the strategy because I need my graveyard around. Like I want the cards in there.
A lot of the times with Lumra, as you're milling stuff over, you want them to be lands so that Lumra can bring them back, whereas Underworld Breach wants them to be anything else so that you can exile them to recast the thing that's causing the mill. So they do pull against each other a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. But there is another deck that won an SCG con.
Korvold or another commander?
Korvold.
Another Korvold, okay.
Yeah, and it's not a lands version.
Just a different version.
It's just like a good Korvold deck that plays like a lot of the new cards, like Evendo Brushraiser, gets to take advantage of like Mayhem Devil again. Yeah. But it also plays like Knuckles the Echidna.
Oh, yeah. Just more treasure makers and stuff.
Yeah. Stormkill Narnest. Like it can lean into a little bit more of the treasures. So, like, who needs Dockside Extortionist when we have other engines in this color combination that can just make treasures really consistently?
Yeah. I feel like that's like a little almost sub theme that we didn't talk about this podcast is like all these commanders. Well, I guess not all of them, but like, specifically Korvold, we thought was like dead once Dockside went, and it still feels like it's like still like a fine option. Rogthrasse was a big Dockside user. Green Goblin would have been a big Dockside user, and all these decks are still fine without.
I mean, who knows? This is one event, but it was an SCG con too, which means that
real
it was,
cards only.
Yeah, it was. You can't use proxies. We've
said this before too. Everything's got to be with a slight grain of salt because of the singleton, because of the 100 card nature, because of the strong pilots have so much weight in CDH, because of how important politicking is and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of individual strength. There's a lot of turn one player bias. It's hard to get, like, real results from, like, one tournament. You kind of have to look at, like, a fucking ton and, like, get an about to, like, understand what's going on in CDH. But it's still cool to see that, like, it's possible. Korvold still can win tournaments. It can do cool shit. If you put in the time and you put in the energy and you get a little lucky, Korvold can do cool things still, which is cool.
I think so, too. Yeah. You mentioned the turn one bias.
Yeah.
You know how Mons at CEDH TV is, like,
I love Mons.
I love what he's been doing recently, too, where he's just, like, watching as much CEDH game content and, like, getting as much data off of it as he can. Did you see the, like, him talking about the turn order bias thing a little bit more recently?
I don't think so.
You should go check out that video, because he talks about how that is right, but the later the game goes, the more favored it is for player three and player four.
Interesting.
And
then
I had a 3-hour game at Locals a little while ago where I was in third seat and I won that game.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That makes sense. After like 4, 5, 6 turns, seating order doesn't really matter anymore.
I don't want to like steal his whole topic. So I'm talking about this at the end of a podcast. Go check out some CEDH TV content, because he's been doing some really cool things with that. And I think that is something that's important to note. Like, maybe there is something that we can learn from this too, where like if you're going third and fourth, like maybe that's something that these like Korvold decks that are built around lands and the Rogthrass decks that play Apex Devastator and even like Green Goblin in particular can use. Like, if you're not winning immediately, you don't need to be in seat one and to seat two to do well. You can take advantage of the fact that you want the game to go a little bit longer and make other people deal with the threats that are going quicker so that you can come in with your win at a later seat.
That makes sense. I think that's definitely a good point to think about when you're mulliganing too. If you're in seat 3 or 4, be more willing to keep a hand that just stays alive rather than a hand that goes for a turn one win or something like that.
Just and think just about the Bee Gees. Yeah.
This is the staying alive. Like if you're eating seat 3 or 4, that should be your strategy, because if you can push to the late game, like you said, and if these stats are correct, then turn order doesn't really matter anymore. So you want to push the game to a point where the advantage your opponents have is gone, and then once you're in that state, that turn 5 or 6, then you can try to like do something, win the game. That's pretty interesting.
It's a great video series that he's doing, so I definitely recommend going to check that out.
Anything else you want to talk about?
No, that was everything that I had on my list. And we have, you know, we're in Atlanta when this podcast comes out, so
which means that we're about to get like a whole bunch of new spoilers that everyone's going to be thinking about and caring about, and we're not talking about any of that.
Right now, no. And honestly, this podcast is the maximum length that I can have it for. Perfect. Me needing it to be done.
Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Damn Nandis, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Mr. Jerby, The Cardboard Cookbook, Penguin Man 0089, Eli the Magic Guy, David Newman, Pat Fires, Frogman, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roy, Zero Boy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Only Groupie, Zach Hartley, Big Leg Banjo, that's where that came from, Reactive, Sean of the Ice, Gearbear Garrett, Mace the Ace, Alexander Smith, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Noosh, Kwaja A. Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby G-Bus.
Follow us on the internet for more content.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at our affiliate link down below.
Thanks for watching.
See you next time. Ban Finelli, Jason Brooks, Sephirius, Ash Wayne, Z-Trip, Hunter the Warlock, John Coba, The Gaming, Kikajow, Dan the Man, Sarcastic, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Dalton Poti, Justin Young, Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Still buy the Halloween playmats, the fuzzy ones, the cool and fuzzy.
Still buy them.
Still buy them, please.